Okay, you want to say something?
If he didn't come up.
That's Mr. Page, can you stand in prayer?
Please stand. We'll follow the prayer and pledge allegiance to the flag. Let's pray. Our Father God, we come to you now, Lord, with thankful hearts for all the ways that you bless us. Father, we ask for forgiveness of our sins, those that we know about, and those that we that we don't know about. Lord, we know before we come before you that you know our needs and our reason for asking. Today, specifically, Father, we ask that you move this board and this government as we proceed with the issues of the budget. Help us, Lord, make good and fair and honest and faithful decisions for the betterment of our people. Of course, in Christ's name, we ask it all. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. This is the first of our budget workshops. We have three more to follow. Number three, approval of the agenda.
I move.
You don't need to do that, that was the workshop.
Okay.
You make motion.
No. Okay. Number four, the board to hold budget work sessions to discuss all aspects of fiscal year 2018-2019 budget priorities. And I do have a schedule here from 9 to 9:30 is Danielle, our finance director. From 9:30 to 10:30, Joe Albritton with insurance. 10:30 to 11, the sheriff's office. 11 o'clock, supervisor of elections. 11:30, the hospital. And then 12 o'clock, the clerk. So we'll get started now with Danielle.
Commissioner Beagle, after Danielle is finished, the TCDA is going to make a brief presentation. So before 9:30, they just want to hand out some material and make a very brief presentation.
Okay, I'm sorry, it's here, I didn't see it. Sorry. Okay.
All right, so we will start with the certified values received from the property appraiser for the year 2018. The general fund, the gross taxable value is $1,346,000,000. The certified value for 2017 was $1,327,000,000, which is a gross taxable value increase of $19,744,000, which is a 1.49% increase. And for the MSTU, the unincorporated area, the gross taxable value for 2018 is $1,116,000,000, and the certified value for 17 was $1,100,000,000, which is a gross taxable value of $16,463,000, which is also a 1.49% increase. This shows the current year millage rate compared to the rollback rate. The budget was prepared this year based on keeping the millage rate the same, which brings in an increase of revenue. The current millage rate is 7.2426 mills for the general fund and 1.1677 mills for the MSTU for a total of 8.4103 mills. The rollback rate, which is the rate in order to bring in the same amount of revenue as the current year, is a lower rate. The proposed aggregate millage rate represents a 0.22% increase above the rollback rate. As a result of the increase in gross taxable values, the rollback rate will represent a millage rate decrease. In keeping the millage rate the same, the 2017-18 fiscal year, the general fund revenue was $9,612,000. for the 18-19 fiscal year budget, the same rate will generate $9,755,000, which is a 1.49% increase of $142,999. The MSTU revenue for the 17-18 fiscal year was $1,284,000. For the 18-19 fiscal year, the same rate will generate $1,304,000, which is the 1.49% increase of $19,224. So in total, by keeping the millage rate the same for the 18-19 fiscal year, we should generate $11,059,000, which is an increase of $162,223. This is an overall of the entire budget, including all the funds. The total budget request for the 18-19 fiscal year is $45,647,000. It does show an increase from 17-18 fiscal year. A quick overview. The general fund has a $733,561 increase. These are increases in our insurance, retirement, and medical examiner fees. We also just need to keep in mind that the 3% pay increase that was given in November is reflected in the increase because the budget had already been approved for the fiscal year and the raises weren't given until November. So that reflects in the increase. The road and bridge, there are increases in health insurance and retirement. We actually, MSTU fund is a decrease. We made our final debt service payment in December of 17, so the remaining amount that's shown is to be used by the hospital for capital. The small county surtax, which started in January after making the final debt service payment, is to be used for capital also. So our overall budget increase is $1,337,000. In the MSTU fund, we budgeted the add-on taxes based on keeping the millage rate the same, and it's an increase of $18,353. We are anticipating a slight decrease in other revenues. These revenues are based on estimates from this year and previous years. The interfund transfer from the general fund is used to offset the calls at the county fire banks inside the city limits. Transfers based on the budget and the percentage of calls. It's a decrease due to the number of calls decreasing, and it helps the general fund or hurts the MSTU fund. We have the new interfund transfer from the small county surtax. It's being used to offset the capital request in all of the funds right now except the general fund. And I'm estimating the amount of the cash carry forward slightly less than last year. And it's leaving the overall revenue at a decrease of $74,714. This shows on the expenditures for MSTU. There's a new department, the Keaton Beach Volunteer Fire Department, but it's offset with monies that they turned over to the BCC. It is reflected in part of the cash carry forward and is designated for that department. There's an overall decrease in expenditures for the MSTU fund, even with the 3% pay increases that were adjusted in the health insurance and retirement increases for next year. So the total recurring expenditures is $1,746,000. With the recurring revenue being $1,654,000, there's a deficit of $91,645. And below that, we have the reserves. We have $573,000 for capital for the MSTU, and the deficit of the $91,645 is already reflected in that to balance the MSTU. The same, so it's an increase of $135,849. The state share revenues are estimates, and you'll have a slight increase based on the estimates received from Department of Revenue of about almost $33,000. We also have an increase in the ad valorem offset with a fiscally constrained of about $20,000. There are decreases in the state grants, but there are increases in the federal grants and the revenue from other local governments. And these revenues are used to offset expenditures. And the net overall recurring revenue increases by $440,000, which includes funding for offsetting expenditures. So the net true revenue increase is about $194,000. The cash carry forward, though, is estimated to be less than what we had last year, making our budget revenue $22,477,000 for general fund. And then on the expenditure side, we have a decrease in the BCC salaries and benefits. This amount includes the adjustment for the pay increases that were received in November, as well as the insurance and retirement increases for next fiscal year. And also an open position was cut to help when narrowing the deficit. And this is a decrease in the operating as well, even though there are budget increases in the medical examiner fees, the required Medicaid payments, and our liability and property insurance increase. And then we come to the transfers to the constitutional offices, the sheriff's office. The initial budget approved in October was $6,259,000. Then we had a 3% pay increase, which increased their budget to $6,381,000. So their current request is $7,312,602. $476,000 of that is offset with revenue that we're going to receive from the school for the SROs, leaving their budget request at $454,669 increase. The supervisor of elections shows an increase. It shows an increase of $25,930, but their actual increase is only $930 because $25,000 last year they requested a vehicle that we showed out of our capital. So her increase includes the $2,448 that was given in November, plus the 2.1 insurance and retirement increases. The tax collector has an increase of $7,272, and this includes $14,988 for the pay increases in November, as well as the 2.1 that we're anticipating for the health insurance and retirement increases, so they actually have an increase this year. Property appraiser has an increase of $28,427, which includes $10,629 for the pay increases given in November, as well as the insurance and retirement for this coming year. Same with the clerk, an increase of $71,568, which includes the $22,437 that was for the pay increases in November, and then the insurance and retirement increases. So, because the increases weren't given until November, that's why the prior year budget was approved October 1st. Then we have the legally designated funds for the 18-19 fiscal year, and these are designated. The other recurring expenditures, emergency, medical services, the TCDA, health department have a budget the same. The actual request for the TCDA is $186,495. So we only budgeted the $142,500 because of the deficit that we're facing. And then the next group is the new grant funded capital. We show it as an expense, but the revenues come in to offset either all or a percentage of the grant. And this is the new non-recurring capital, totaling $408,000. It's already been reflected in the reserve for capital improvements. The total expenditures budgeted is $17,079,000 before the capital adjustment, with the recurring revenue being $15,777,000 and the recurring expenditures after the capital adjustment being $16,670,000. There is a deficit in the general fund of $893,539. And of this deficit, 12% is the supervisor of elections, the clerk, property appraiser, and tax collector, which includes the amended budgets for November for the pay increase as well as the increase for next fiscal year for health insurance and retirement. 23% is for the county departments, and 65% is the sheriff's office. And this is the list of what's designated to be funded by the carry forward money or capital improvements or projects that will not be completed according to fiscal year. Therefore, the current funds designated for those projects to be carried forward. It's the same with the legally designated funds. These are funds that have a reserve or sinking fund and are legally restricted in how they can be used. And that brings up to the general fund reserves. Capital improvements already reflects the new capital request and it's subject to change between now and the end of the fiscal year, depending on if we have any transfers out and which will change our carry forward amount estimates. The total expenditures budgeted in the general fund, including recurring, non-recurring, and designated, is
something that PCDA has been working on the last quarter, and it's called the strategic plan. I thought it was important going forward for us to have a plan. The last strategic plan was done by Foley or BOTAP, once they sold the property, that plan became obsolete. So this is a living plan. So our group met, did three rounds of two-hour meetings to do the SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, where we really drill down and see what the good, the bad, and the ugly of the community, and you can see that down here. This plan, I think it's important to note that the Economic Development Institute at the University of Oklahoma, they're credited with developing the Living Strategic Plan, and it has twofold purpose. One is to provide an instrument that prioritizes immediate economic development goals for the community, and two, provide a tool for elected officials to reference when the respective constituent base makes inquiries such as, what's the Economic Development Organization doing? It's not just like that here, it's like that everywhere. So, and additionally, it's, you know, it's essential, and I think that one of the important aspects of this is that less than 2% of America's communities have a strategic plan, and only one has gone the extra mile to do the living plan. That's updated annually. And that, and to ensure that initial goals and objectives are met and that new goals and objectives are developed and added to the next year's program of work. So, during the SWOT analysis, we came up with a number of different ideas from the SWOT analysis. It moved into the strategic planning. What do we really need to accomplish? The living plan, I think, is really good. I used it when I was in the Atlanta area. And what that does for you, the elected officials, is it gives you a yardstick to measure the organization's performance on a yearly basis and stuff. And now you have something to look at. It's also the way that communities generate momentum, and because you're knocking off these projects, and then each year the TCDA board will meet, and representatives from the commission are always welcome, and then you decide what you want to do the next year. So for instance, this year I know a couple of goals are going to be to get an assisted living center to come here. Another goal might be to adopt the old hospital, transform it into something new and useful. I know that there are some people looking at that right now. So we're real excited about it. To give you an idea, that the strategic plan that Foley did cost about $350,000. If we would have gone out to have somebody come in to do the SWOT analysis, for a community this size, that's about $25,000. The strategic planning part ranges between $80,000 and $100,000 for a community this size. So we put, there's been over 200 hours of time invested in this. And so if you look at the last paragraph, it's, we call it in economic development, the value-added proposition. So we look at it in terms of $100,000 cost savings by creating a template for a successful and sustainable long-term development of the economy. We're planning for that. It's something that you always have. You will always have this. And then you always have a barometer to measure the performance of the organization as well. So pretty excited to bring that to you. Had a couple of other notes. In order to improve our communications flow, I talked with Wolanda last week, and we are now going to, or she's agreed to help copy all the commissioners on the reports that we do on a weekly basis, weekly update reports. I think it's important that you know as much as our board knows, and so that's in play. One of the other things that we did that we're working on that should be finished within the next maybe 2 to 4 weeks is that all of the data that has been captured on the TCDA computer and all of the old files, remember this organization started in 1959, I think, or 1961, I forget exactly which year, but so all of that is going to be transformed to the cloud, so it'll be easily accessible and be permanently stored in a safe place. If anybody has any questions 5 years from now, what happened to that, or what happened to this, that'll be available. That was not, that's something I've always wanted to do. We started off scanning all the old documents, and scanning it to thumb drives, but we moved on now and we're sending this to the cloud. So all archived data will be saved, captured, and put in a safe place. I think that's what I have. Do I have like 2 more minutes or?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Hold on 1 second. I have somebody that's going to call in. So, is there So are there any questions about the strategic plan at all? We don't plan to launch it until maybe after the elections. So it'll give us some time to really, we've come up with a draft of it, but it's not in a permanent state right now. And want to make sure that when we come back with it, that we'll have it. But I think I was impressed with our board giving up the extra time to do this. We did have one moderator come in, and I think he had phone appointments with most of you to get input from the county commission. And I think this is something that again, I refer to as this current board, and there's Sherman Green right there. The current board's a legacy project because we've never had this before, and we want to be able to do something like that going, so it'd be available going forward. So I had somebody call, that was going to call in about the apartment complex, so that's what I'm waiting on, but they may not.
Chair, I have a question. So this is not your strategic plans. This is your strategic plan to develop a strategic plan.
This is to show you what we've been doing the past quarter. Yeah. This is because I don't know that anybody outside of the economic development field has any kind of idea what a strategic plan is. I think for financials, she has a strategic plan, and probably has strategic plans for how they're going to work for the next year. Bruce, same thing. But when it comes to economic development, if you don't have a strategic plan, then you can't mark your progress. So again, the important part about this living plan, and less than 1% of communities across the land have this, is that it really serves to keep the elected officials informed and protect the elected officials from, so that they'll always know what the economic development or the EDO is up to. And that's, and Aaron's agreed to help us with starting when we're ready to start publishing parts of the plan as it continues to evolve. But I just wanted to make you aware of that's what we've done in the last quarter. That's the amount of money that you would have spent had you gone out and bought one, brought somebody in to do this. And I feel everybody feels very positive about this. And what I like about it the most is it gives you all an idea of ongoing. This is what they're, not just like what did they do last month, this is what they're going to do this year.
I don't think most of us fell off the table truck. We know what strategic plans are, but I look forward to hearing the weekly updates and
okay.
Gauging your progress from there. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Anybody have any questions?
Mm-hmm.
No.
It won't cost any more money to do that plan, or you've got that to take care of.
I've got that part already taken care of. Hey.
Good morning.
Saul. This is Saul Crafton. So I've got you on my speaker phone and I'm putting it right in front of Chairman Siegel's desk. Alright. So if you wouldn't mind, go ahead and give the commissioners an update on the project.
Sure, yeah. We got you. I'm not sure if I jumped up yesterday, John, but obviously, we're still pretty forward to on the DNA talking from yesterday, closed on being land for the project a couple months ago. And we're pretty much just waiting on, we were just waiting on the final approval from Fish and Wildlife on the Gopher Tortoise relocation plan. So, yeah, it's just a little longer than we expected just because there's still been a couple of the birds that were on the border of our property, that called that required us to redo the survey, shut down on June 1st, and then had to go back to Fish and Wildlife for approval. Normally that takes about 90 days, but when we probably was very helpful and calm enough and this just a community engagement exercise in. So we got that approval on Thursday. This was then sent on the side to the lender for the project. That is the final item that they were waiting for, send the packages to their basically government official drawing to loan papers. There's one that they have a final committee that votes on the project, which, you know, pretty much a formality of the specs have been underwritten. And then once they go on it, it goes to government. That usually takes about 2 weeks. And then as soon as the down spread's done, we'll be scheduling for agreement. We have a kind of a hard deadline of 9-1 to begin construction, because that's the survey that we just did on just one for the Gilbert Corridor team for 90 days. So I'm aware of that deadline. That doesn't feel to be any issue with meeting it. So we're pretty excited that this is finally coming to fruition. It's been long path and take a lot of work for everyone, and then we appreciate how much the CAP team has, you know, stuck with us and how the support stuff came up and getting it pushing the forward up the hill. But we think we're very near the finish line and looking forward to getting you guys new housing out there. And then of course moving forward with phase two once this one leases up.
Okay. Thanks all for the update. Anybody have any questions?
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
So September the 1st, then?
Hoping for a groundbreaking sooner. They're supposed to be starting construction. So I never want to see a gopher tortoise. I've never seen one in the wild. But if I did, I'm sure I would have some things to say to it. That cost us, what do you think, about 3 months? 4 months because of that. I get that. I've heard 300s, but not go for tortoise hunters. You know? So I but as you just heard, it's rolling. Back to your question, it will cost us a little bit. There's the development of the plan, which TCDA has done to date, and we've had some expense getting us to this point. The actual increase comes with the implementation component, where like we say, okay, we want to put this assisted living center here, and maybe we have to spend some money on advertising to get more people to come in to take a look. We've got somebody that's supposed to be furnishing us another RFP within 2 weeks. Somebody that really specializes in the staffing of the facilities, and the other arm of that company develops the facility. So it's just, we never know what we're going to get into when we get started with one of these projects, but as Chairman Fiegel can tell you, it always takes longer than what you could even imagine.
What I was questioning was, is it going to be an additional cost to the county?
No.
That's what I wanted to hear.
That's what I wanted to tell you. So, now this is something professionally that I wanted to do for you, so that you don't have to do this again. You just add to it, and then you have something to evaluate your organization with. So,
this is good. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for doing that.
Yes, sure. Mr. Dennis, anything?
No. Okay. Good to see you.
Good to see you all. Thank you very much.
Okay, next will be Joe Albright. Talk about insurance.
Everybody's favorite topic. So what I wanted to do is kind of walk you through the process the insurance committee went through to arrive where they are. And you mind handing out the loss history? One thing I wanted to do is let you see kind of inside the insurance program and get an understanding of how the program is running. One of the things that the main thing we typically always look at is the loss history. So we'll just jump right to that. And as I go, I know some of the things we're going to be talking about, you know, you may not be familiar with, just stop me. Probably best if you stop me, and then we can go from there. So if you turn to the first page, the number in the bottom right, the 106.6, that is the loss ratio that was used at the time that the renewal was generated. Typically, any number above 80% represents a loss to the insurance company, and it would, this is based on federal law. Federal law establishes percentages and ratios and different things, but so any insurance program that operates above an 80% loss ratio is considered to be losing money, and you have to raise their rates above medical trend. Medical trend is expected future utilization in the coming year, and medical inflation, which, you know, everything costs more next year. So that number is the aggregate number. That's for the entire county program. We're going to call that the policy. If you turn to the next page, you will see the two different plans that reside inside the policy. The 97.1, the number at the top, that is the county plan. And the 137.3 at the bottom is the sheriff's office. Those plans were kept separate so we could track the efficiency, make whatever changes we need to make operationally to try to make them run as efficiently as we possibly could. So we could go further through this if you wanted to come through with that. That's fine. It's going to get into some more detail about pharmacy utilization and where the money's being spent, those kinds of things. But for the purpose of understanding the renewal, that's not really relevant. That's all historical information. So when the insurance committee met, this is the information that they had to make their decision. I'm going to first talk about the county. The plan is the 97% loss ratio. So if you did the math on the 97% loss ratio, and I even was a little more conservative and raised it from 80 to 85%. That's the other number that the federal government allows you to use on loss ratios. The plan would be calling for a 23.6% rate increase. One of the things that the insurance committee has done over the years is they've been very diligent, really diligent, about keeping the plan in a position where if you had a situation like this where you have the county has five open large claims of your employees, there's five open large claims. That's where these big loss ratios are coming from, is those five claims. The insurance committee over the years has decided that they wanted to try to prevent a rate shock. So if something like this happened, we need a measure in place so that we don't get the 23.6% rate increase. They were successful in the way it was structured. The end offer, and I can walk you through all the iterations if you want to. It probably bore you to tears, but the final offer from the insurance company with a small change to the pharmacy, and we can talk about that in just a minute, is calling for a 2.1% rate increase. So it went from a 23.6 to a 2.1. Something to file away that I'm going to come back to is the strategy that they had in place that made that possible has now been used. So if you think of it like having a bullet, once you shoot it, you don't have the bullet anymore. So the insurance committee, starting in September, is going to go through the process again to develop the strategy again to come back and do the same kind of thing. Because where we sit right now is that safety net that they built has been used. It was used very, very effectively, I have to say. To go from a 23.6 to a 2.1 is pretty strong. That's a pretty strong strategy. So that's the offer on the table. You want to hand this one out now?
Can I ask a question?
2.1% equates to how much money?
I don't know if I have that on this one.
I think it's about 44,600.
Yep.
So how much?
44,000.
I can tell you exactly this, well.
That's about it.
Okay.
Ballpark.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
The five open large claims. County sheriff, can you write those up?
There's five on the county, and there's an additional one that the sheriff has.
Okay.
So there's a total of six.
Okay.
But right now, the plan that I'm specifically talking to is the county's plan.
Okay.
And there are five large claims on that.
Gotcha.
Any other questions about that? Okay. So when you look at the sheet that was just put in front of you, the column farther to the left, that's your current. Second column with the header of option three, that is the 2.1% rate increase that the insurance committee decided on. If you compare those two plans, there's one change. The change is in the pharmacy, the way the pharmacy copays are structured. The way they're currently structured, there's three tiers to the plan. It's 10, 30, and 50 is the copays currently. The offer was to change that from 10, 35, 5% increase, or a $5 increase in tier two, and 70, from 50 in tier three, a $20 increase. One of the reasons for this is because this three-tier system that we've all gotten used to over the years is changing. At some point in the future, the way this is going to evolve, most of the drugs in the drug system right now, in the FDA approval system, over 90% of the drugs are specialty drugs. Specialty drugs don't really fall in any of these categories. Their patent is structured differently, where the 50 increase to 70 tier 3 in this program right here, those are your brand new, brand name, tier 3, top line drugs. The specialty drugs, and their patents run for, I think it's 17 years. After the patent runs in 17 years, that's when you see it drop to tier 1, or generic, or if there's a competitive situation, you'll see it drop to tier two. Okay? The way specialty drugs work, and the traditional plan is all based on chemical compounds, patenting a chemical compound. In the future, specialty drugs are based on chemical compounds, but the patented part makes them separate and distinct is they patent the physical process that the body uses to take in the medication. The way it's administered is patented. Those patents do not have a timeline. They run forever. The generic version to a specialty drug is called a biosimilar. The biosimilar drugs have the same chemical compound as a specialty drug, but it has to, by law, use a different mechanism to be delivered to the body. So they're not as efficient. They're 70% efficient. So what winds up happening is the only alternative to the specialty is the biosimilar. That is a long, drawn-out explanation of when you change the tier structure of the plan the way they're doing it. What they're doing is they're preparing the plan for the day that you no longer have a three-tier system. You have a two, classification system. You have your generic and brand names, which is what you're used to now. And then you have your specialty and biosimilars. Specialty and biosimilars are unique because of the patent. But the other reason that they're very unique is because they don't have to give rebates. They don't have to give any kind of sales incentive because they control 100% of the market forever. So they're going to separate these two claims, these two different ways that medications are sold. And none of this is coming through the insurance company. It's coming from the FDA and through the pharmacy manufacturers. So when you think of this changing to $70, we're tempted to say it's 70 versus 50. And that's true for this year, maybe next year, maybe even the next year. But at some point in time, 70 won't even be in the tiers. It'll be over here in the specialty side. Because if 90% of the drugs that are being developed are specialty drugs, that means that the ones that traditionally fall in that 70, there aren't any anymore. They're all over in the specialty side. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So by changing the 70, the 50 to 70, that was the first question that we looked at, is what's the long term? The insurance committee is really good about thinking about everything in terms of 3 to 5 years. They look at everything long term. So the first thing was that, the biosimilar scenario, okay? The second question they asked was, how is it impacting the group? Like, so we talked about what the 3 to 5 year strategy looks like with the specialties. Let's talk about today to 3 years. What's the impact on the group in that time horizon? So we pulled, Crystal pulled some numbers, and what we came up with, I want to get the number exactly right for you. Tier 3 utilization for the employees of the county and the sheriff, both together, represent a little bit less than 7.8% of the total. So it's less than 10%. 7.8% is the number of people that are going to be impacted by changing the structure of Tier 3. The next question was, well, what's the average dollar impact to each of those people? So the average dollar impact to those 7.8% of people is $80 a year. It's there's an average of 4 scripts for every prescription, tier 3 prescription, and we're talking about a $20 change per script, you know, per fill. So that's $80 a year. So 7.8% of the people, of the members of the county and the sheriff together, total employees, will experience an average of an $80 impact a year. That's what that change does. So it accomplishes two things. The one thing is it drops the premiums collectively. I think it's in excess of $60,000 that it drops the premiums. If you didn't make this change, your collected premium would be $67,000 more. Okay? So this change impacting 7.8% of the people for $80 a year saves the county $67,000 per year. Is that number right?
When you combine.
Yeah, both together.
Gordon, sure.
Yep. The other thing it does is it positions the county so when the specialty process happens, we're in the right place to be able to receive that change. So that's the only difference in your current and the offer, the 2.1% offer. So that's the story of your plan. Any questions about the county's plan? The county's policy at the county's plan?
Basically, they're the same, except for the one difference.
Yes, sir. Well, there's always...
The copay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, that we are completely aware of. There's always, anytime you're dealing with a federally regulated plan, there's gremlins everywhere. You know, they'll roll these little tiny things out and won't tell anybody, and then all of a sudden they hit. But we can't do anybody those anyway. That's not a choice you are making. That's the change that the federal government is bringing upon everyone in the country. So there's my disclaimer on that. There is a possibility something like that could happen, but that's got nothing to do with the choices that the county's making.
Just a moment of curiosity, what are some examples of these specialty trusts?
Anything that has a commercial on TV.
Yeah, well, there's something to be said about that. The one I saw was really interesting to me, and this has to do because of a personal motive. So there's all these different types of leukemia, and so acute leukemia is typically my brother's father-in-law went through this. He's passed away now from leukemia, but when you get diagnosed with that, they can put you through this regimen, of chemo and things like that, and it will 70% of the time put it in remission. But when it comes back, they can't give you the same treatment because your body will have an allergic reaction to that treatment, and then that allergic reaction will kill you. So when you have a reoccurrence, which is typically pretty high in the type of leukemia that he had, there is no treatment, historically. The new drug that they're producing puts you in remission 100% of the time for 5 years. On average of 5 years. And then you can be treated over and over and over and over again for this specific genetic link to that type of leukemia. The treatment is $800,000, just medicine, per year, for that one treatment that puts you in remission for 5 years. I'm not sure how many cycles they inject you or whatever that is. But so it's $800,000 to get 5 years. And then they know it's going to come back, but then it's another $800,000 for another 5 years. But you have to have the right genetic code and the right type of leukemia for that drug to work. So that's where they come up with the idea of specialty, because it's not even a medication where we can all take an Advil. It's not even a medication that everyone can take. You have to have the right DNA to even be able to take it. And then on top of that, it's got to be the exact right kind of cancer. And you have to be able to receive it through a certain process in your body. Those types of things. But that's an example of specialty, and there are thousands of them being developed right now. And it all has to do with big data and the mapping of the genome. And so you've got this world of DNA information they didn't have before. So they're able to go in and pinpoint all these kinds of things. That's an example.
Any other questions?
Like over a period of time, that price will go down when they develop more and more of it. You think like everything else, and there's more of them?
I would hope. I mean, I don't really, it's kind of an unknown economic structure at this point, because it's such a new thing. Some things the price goes up on. Because, you know, I'm like you. I would think and I would hope that it would go down over time. But, you know, sometimes when they do come up with something that's really novel, the price never goes down. It just goes up.
There's competition, doesn't really work out.
Right, and they can't have competition in this. No one can. There's no way for anyone to compete with them. They have a true monopoly on that particular specialty drug. And the biosimilar, which is the closest thing to it, doesn't work as well. So then you get into the debate of which one do you think the doctor is going to prescribe. You know, if you're talking about something as serious as leukemia, which one would you want? I'd want the one that's going to work. Mm-hmm. So I don't know the answer to that, if it's going to go down or not.
Sorry.
Did you have a question?
I did, but I said it doesn't matter.
Okay. So that's the review of the county's plan. The second one we want to talk about is the sheriff's office plan. The sheriff's office, the current plan is the center one. The one says TCSO current plan, the header at the top. Keep in mind the loss history that we're working with here for the sheriff. Sheriff has one large claim, open large claim. The loss history calls for a 63.8% rate increase. That's a big one. Historically, before the sheriff came on to the county's plan, county's policy, and took their separate plan, the sheriff's office would receive a 10 to 14% annual increase. Reason for that is the sheriff's office employee count is too low to be what's referred to as credible. So they were receiving the manual rate increase. Whatever, the insurance company would open the book up, you had this demographic, you had this age range, you had this location, you had this many people, it's 11%. No matter where you were in the state of Florida, everybody got the same annual rate. That was the situation that the sheriff was in previously. The sheriff comes on to the county plan, and we made changes. The sheriff's plan versus the plan they're on now was different. So we made some changes and we tried to move some alignments to make things match. So there's a couple things that are different on the sheriff's plan versus the county's plan. Because what we are in the middle of transitioning from what the sheriff had to where the sheriff wants to be. So we're moving through this progression to do that. And we make these tweaks and these changes. So that's where the sheriff was. Option six is the offer from the insurance company, a 4.7. Now, when you consider that the ratio, the claims history, calls for a 63, traditionally they would have gotten, let's average it at 12. And that 12 is non-negotiable. That's the manual rate. And they're looking at a 4.7. That's pretty good. There are a lot of reasons why the carrier would go from a 63 down to a 4.7. I'll just tell you the one that makes up the vast majority of that reason. That is because that one large claim is going to be corrected when this policy closes and the new one opens in October. If that claim, when that claim gets closed, it's going to be reinsured out of their loss history. A portion of that, a big portion of it, is going to be reinsured out. So even though the loss history calls for the 63.8, when you make that adjustment and you pull that out, now of course the insurance company doesn't know when it's going to close. It might linger for 5 years. And you've got reinsurance threshold, you know, 1 year after the other being hit. So that's where they come up with some of these numbers. But when you make that adjustment, it drops it significantly down from the 63. And the 4.7 is the end result of how all these negotiations and structures went. Sheriff didn't have the same mechanisms and measures in place that the county had. We've had the county for 6 years. We've been building all these things in year after year after year for a long time. We took the sheriff on in October, this past October. So we don't have the time to set these things in place like we have with the county.
So just, I want to make sure that I'm clear. Mm-hmm. So what this is not exactly the same as what the county employees have, but it's moving toward that. Is that what you...
That's the goal.
Uh-huh. So, So it's still not where we want, he wants to be, or we want to be, but it's somewhere in between.
Correct. So you have oranges, which is the county. You have apples, which was the sheriff. Before the sheriff came on the plan, what they've got right now is kind of an apple and orange fruit salad. And we're moving toward
the orange.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a hybrid. It's kind of mixed together. We didn't want to make any changes that was going to be detrimental to the sheriff rates. And we've got to put the sheriff in a position where, over time, when the positive loss histories start coming in, the sheriff can benefit from it, and the county as a whole can benefit from it. So that just means baby steps.
To move it all the way would be what?
In a rate perspective, that's what we're going to get to next.
Okay.
We've got another sheet that talks about that. Actually, it's the last column in this sheet. So option six on that sheet is the sheriff's. If you just took the sheriff's plan inside the policy, that's how we can get the sheriff down to the 4.7. Two changes made. The sheriff's program had a creative wellness provision to cover morbid obesity procedures. That's been removed. And they take the same pharmacy change that the county does. That's the two changes to the sheriff's plan. And it puts them at a 4.7. And of course, the pharmacy change, the numbers I gave you with the 7.8% already included the sheriff in that scenario. So that's the circumstance. Option six that you see there is the sheriff's renewal with those two changes. Any questions on that?
Now, option three was for the county. That's a 2.1% increase. Option six is the sheriff's part of it. It's 4.7, which could have been a catastrophic 60, some odd percent. What's your time frame before we get the sheriff on the same plan as the county?
Well,
just a guess.
Okay.
2 years, 5 years?
The original estimate was we weren't even of the opinion that we were going to have a viable way of doing it without it being a net impact to the county as a whole until after the 2 years. Going through this process for 2 years. The reason for that is because the sheriff's office currently doesn't have any loss histories. So there's no way for the insurance carrier to look at what's really even going on inside the sheriff if there's no history, there's no data on loss histories. When you're in a manually rated small group situation, there are no loss histories. So we needed 2 years to collect loss histories. Right. So, I'm uncomfortable making any kind of commitment at all less than 2 years, just because I won't have any data to tell you what it means. Now, insurance companies can project things, and we did ask the company, if you were to merge them right now, put them on one plan, and go with the county's benefit structure. Go ahead and go from the fruit salad all the way to the orange. What's the impact? What would that look like? And the reason we ask that question is because we want to see if it's going in the correct direction. We want to see the kind of progress we're making currently. Because if in year one, we're not seeing any positive progress, we got to make a lot of changes in year two, or maybe even come to the realization that merging them is just generally a bad idea. Mathematically, it just doesn't make sense. So we want to see what's going on with that. So if you look at option seven here, that's the number that the carrier gave us. That's a real number. That's the quote that we got. To merge them now.
That's everybody, county and state.
That's everybody going on one plan.
The cost is 8.4%.
Increase, correct. So the question is, what does that mean, dollar-wise, if we were to merge? What does that mean? Well, these two columns over to the far right that doesn't have the block around them is a series of analysis that we ran. There's one number from the county's perspective. It's about halfway down. It says premium impact total from proposed to combined, because the proposed 2.1 is the best offer that we have. So we start with that offer. We don't start with current. We start with what the alternative to the board would be, which is the 2.1. So if you go to option 7 from option 3, think of it that way, it'll cost the board $211,771.44 more than if you didn't combine. So that's the impact. It's $211,000. So the question is, okay, the cost of the board more, what's the impact on the sheriff? Because if we combine, we're thinking of one big dollar amount, right? So go to the column directly to the right, and the question of how much does it save the sheriff is $71,260. So the very bottom tells you total impact to group policy from current to combined. Once again, I just put that number in there to see if we were going in the right direction. That is not the real number for you to consider. The very bottom number is the real number to consider, which is going from option 3 and 6 to option 7. It's $140,000 impact. So it costs the group as a whole, the county as a whole, $140,000 more to combine than if you kept them separate.
As they are.
Sir?
As they are now.
Well, with those small changes
with
that
small
we talked changes. About?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Now,
right. So the question that I had, being that I've got a different set of responsibilities than you guys do, is are we going in the right direction? Well, the numbers you compare to see if we're going in the right direction are that you compare the two numbers at the bottom. It's a $216,000 from current to $140,000 from proposed. So the net effect is 76. We're moving in the right direction because the proposed number is lower than the current number of the impact to the board. Now, you throw into that that we have big claims numbers that are sitting there. And you add to that also that we're about to start going through the strategy process to prepare for the next 3 to 5 years. My professional opinion is we are in a very good position. We're in a very good place. When you start netting out these large claims and you bring those numbers down and we continue to make the changes and then we build the strategy with the idea of what does this look like 3 to 5 years from now, with things like the specialty medications and, you know, what are average, you know, stereotypical numbers that other groups are seeing, those kinds of things, I think we're going to be in a really good position. The other measure to determine if it was moving in the right direction is comparing the credibility ratios. So one of the things we wanted to accomplish is the county enjoyed a 54% credibility factor. That means your renewals were 54% credible to your claims, not manual. The sheriff was zero credible, so he got only manual. Okay? So the weighted average of those two things together was about 33%. 54 for the county, zero for the sheriff. Different, you know, you add all the employees together, divide it by the number of employees in each group, you get the weighted average. It was 33%. The current weighted average, if you combine, is 40. So the credibility factor is going up, which is the goal. That's one of the things we're wanting to accomplish. So if you imagine a checklist of things we need to do and see, if this is going in the right direction, we check every single box. I can't tell you when exactly those things are going to cross where we it makes good sense mathematically, but I can tell you that the curve's going in the correct direction. I just don't know when they're going to cross. So that's everything I know about that right now. Is there any questions? I know it's confusing, and I'm sorry about that, but I don't know any other way to do that.
So with the pharmacy change, there would be a total of 8, 1 for the sheriff and 7 for the county. That would be an impact. The pharmacy change.
No, ma'am, we don't know. What do you mean by 1 and 7?
It's, employees.
Oh.
The pharmacy
no,
change.
No, it's a percentage. So 7.8.
It's not 7.8 people, you said, though, right?
Well, 7.8% of the total people. So if there's 200 people, it's 15 people.
Oh, okay.
It's a percentage.
So 15 people versus how many? The sheriff's got how many?
Oh, it's not broken out that way.
Oh, okay.
It's just total utilization. I understand your question now.
Okay.
It's total utilization. So, I'm always hesitant to do that with medications, to try to hone in real specifically on a given group because of medications, because that can absolutely change, I mean, quickly. There's no way of knowing. But we can look at the historical impacts overall, just to get an idea of, at that moment in, you know, moment in time kind of thing. But if you look at the tier utilization over the last 5 years, they always give us this really interesting graph that has tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 in mail order utilization percentages, and generally they are very, very close from 1 year to the next. So I do believe it's reasonable to say that 7.8, somewhere between 6 and 9% is a real number. That's reality. What person is going to be using that tier 3 medication is a different question. And that's why I'm careful about the number it'll hit in one, you know, versus the other. I'm more comfortable saying I'm good with the range for all people, but that, you know, honing in on a specific number is a little dicey.
Especially medication, you know, beyond the leukemia, whatever. I mean, it can be a reoccurring. I mean, it's. You would almost say it's maintenance, but it's especially medication, as she said, you know, that's advertised on television. So to go back and really not to be argumentative, but you said 4 scripts, $80, it really is 12 scripts because you're getting an increase of $20 a month. That's $240, not $80.
No.
An increase in 4 years.
No, sir. The math was actually calculated based on each time it's filled, not the script. I had that same question that you had, and we verified it. We called United because my thought was, okay, well, if there's 4, that's really 12.
Right.
So that's really 48.
Right.
Right? Because it's 4 times 12 times that it's filled.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make sure. Now, when you're saying 4, do you mean...
I'm talking straight
to the insurance company.
Oh,
I asked them, are you saying 4 prescriptions times 12 fills, or are you saying 4 fills? How many times do you go into the pharmacy and get your medicine? Because it's $20 every time you do it. It's 4 times to the pharmacy. It's 4 fills. So that 4 isn't the number of prescriptions, it's the number of fills.
And that's just the average of what, especially?
Well, it's the average of tier 3.
Tier 3, right.
The specialty thing happened.
Well, tier 3.
That's like a tile. Trust me, you'll know when that happens, because that's going to be like a tile wave. They're going to have to do some regulation changes at the federal level on that, because that's a mess. But I follow it the same way you did.
Well, in reality, though, it's still $240 if you're on a tier 3 drug. For years.
It's 80.
How do you get it filled 3 months at a time?
It's $80.
Well, yeah, but...
Your 3 months supply.
3 months supply. It's full
fills. Oh, I'm talking about the tier 3. I think we're talking about two different things.
No, tier 3.
Okay, so the tier three average is four fills. So every four times you go pay the $70.
Or 90 days supply.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
You want to
my benefit. What would be the disadvantage to the sheriff's employees on coverage? I'm attracted to the 2.1% increase for the county employees and 4.7% for the sheriff's employees. And there was two minor differences if we went that route. And one of those was we're going to eliminate the obesity coverage. And what was the other?
The same pharmacy adjustment.
And the pharmacy would be the same as what
the county
has. So basically the two plans with the 2.1% and the 4.7% are the same.
Except for their deductible.
Except for what?
Their deductible.
So
the deductible is different.
I didn't hear that.
The deductible
is different for the board and the county, I mean the sheriff.
So the deductible for the county is 500.
Yeah.
The deductible for the sheriff is 1,000. That was one of the things that we didn't want to cause a negative impact.
Okay.
The sheriff started at 1,000. So if we dropped it to 500, it wouldn't be 4.7. It would be significantly higher. When you lower the deductible, the premium goes up.
And so that's the big difference. Is that 5?
Sheriff's premium is
higher.
Right. Well, the out-of-network coverages are different as well. Those really aren't that big of a deal for the group because most everybody goes in network. So
yeah.
the one that is more a reality is the 500 to 1,000.
Deductible.
And then the 1,000 to 3,000 per family.
And we eliminate that if we could afford it in spending $140,000 putting everybody on the same plan now, rather than work hard, everybody being the same within 2 years. Is that the decision that Morris faced with? Or did I make that clear?
Well,
is it 140? Is that
one? That was the debt. Actually, it was 211,771.
Well, that's from current.
Yeah.
So it depends on if you're looking at it, and I would give both those numbers, because from an insurance guy's perspective, you compare options, proposals. From your perspective, you're changing your budget. So you start back at the zero every time. So the impact to your budget from what you paid last year, if you did that, is $216,000.
Oh, worse than I thought, man.
That's the impact if you think about it in terms of what's your premium currently versus if you merge, it's $216,000. If you look at it from what options you're facing, 3 and 6, to merging, that's the 140. Now, I didn't know which one how you were going to look at it, so I got
paid. Let's look at the 216,000. And what you get for 216,000, basically, the big is $500 deductible versus $1,000 deductible. Now, how many employees is in the sheriff's group?
79.
And not all of those will have a claim that would require $1,000 deductible probably. So if they all had one claim, then they had to pay $1,000 deductible. That's $500 there. 500 times 80 is, I mean, the math doesn't work for me.
I can explain that to you.
Well, I mean, there are organizations where to make the rates competitive, they pay on the side, you know. If you have one of these $1,000 claims, we pay $500 separate check from the county, and that makes you equal to what the insurance company you save money on premiums. You ever heard of such a plan as that?
Savings.
Well, there are a lot of regulations around things like that.
Okay.
If that's something I'm not saying we could look into that. Absolutely, we would. But there's an awful lot of
federal regulations. My idea wouldn't work.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
The short answer is I don't know. We'd have to look into it. But I would definitely want to do some due diligence before I told you we could even do that. because you get into a lot of different regulatory bodies and could look at that from everything from discrimination. I mean, you could look at a lot of different things.
Forget my idea. But there are ways that sometimes the company can
get, yes, sir,
for some of these claims and reduce the insurance total number.
The main reason for the difference isn't necessarily the deductible. The main reason for the change is the base premium comparisons. For example, the sheriff base premium is $826. Employee only, but $1,000 deductible plan. Currently, it's $826. The base premium for the county for $500 deductible is, I didn't bring my glasses, basically $700. So you're starting with $126 discrepancy right out of shoot. And when you merge them, obviously, it does that. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's one of the discrepancies. Another factor that weighs heavily on this is the insurance company doesn't have any loss histories. They are spitballing, throwing the dart, basically, at this point, and they have to calculate that risk assessment somehow. If you ask them to merge them, they have to remain solvent. So how are they going to cover that unknown? Well, they're going to charge a little more for it, just to make sure that it's covered, because what they don't want to do is have you merge these, and they come back to you next year, and they miss it, and now we're coming in here saying, we can't go below a 15% rate increase, I'm sorry. They don't want to do that. So they're conservative on the front end when they don't know all the information, and we just don't have a lot of information yet about sharing. So those two factors weigh really heavily into how they're coming up with that.
So basically, you and the insurance committee, y'all have spent a lot of time weighing all these options, and you feel like you presented the best option for us that you can.
I'm very
considering everything else that, you know.
I think it's important that the board remember as well that the strategy that the insurance committee had in place worked. I mean, it worked just like, even better than we hoped when you get into a situation where you have all these big claims. It worked, it did its job. But like I mentioned before, once it did its job, it's gone now. It's like if you buy an option on a piece of property. Once it's gone, it's gone. I mean, so they're going to start all over. The same thing we did 6 years ago when we first came in here, and we went through all of this, and we're a lot more advanced now than we were 6 years ago on how we go through this process. But the insurance committee is going to go through the process and come up with the strategy that best fits the county for a new 3 to 5 year plan. So we can try to put ourselves in a situation to, you know, be protected again. I think that's an important consideration. I don't have any idea, nor does Gary in here. We don't really have any idea what that's going to look like. What the new strategy is going to look like. We just don't know. Things change all the time. That's the reason we go through this process. So I think that those are things you've got to keep in mind. But for the current year, this is the best we can come up with.
Do y'all have any other counties that are doing a combination sheriff department and commission?
We don't, but we know a lot that do.
In other words, T9 Healthcare does it in Florida.
Oh yeah, they got counties that the sheriff. It's not uncommon that the sheriff be part of the county's insurance. That's not uncommon at all. I don't really know the percentage. Is Marty in here?
Yes, sir.
You may know. Do you know what the percentage is? The number of counties that have the sheriff on the plan? It's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
I just don't know what the number is.
I know that
it's not rare.
Dixie does not, but Lafayette does.
It's not rare at all.
Over a period of time, you've had it split some long enough that their rate has gone down and equaled out. I mean, probably don't know that figure, but.
I'm very confident that the sheriff's rate is going to come down. I have a hard time seeing any scenario where that won't happen. Prior to the big claim that hit, the sheriff's loss ratio, they were running, we didn't have a lot of information. It wasn't statistically valid, of course, because we didn't have enough data on it. But they were running in the 30s. Now, if you're running in the 30s, what I do is I call the insurance company and say, well, we want a big rate reduction. I mean, this is, the bottom line is the sheriff at $826 is paying way too much in this shit. But we got to collect the evidence to prove it before an insurance company will say, okay, I got it. Well, we're going to lower it. But if you didn't have that one big claim, or even after you let that big claim out, after it closes next year, their loss ratio is going to be very strong. And we're going to be able to get a significant rate reduction off of where they are. It's just, you know, doing it right now, we just don't have enough data to do it. We don't have enough data to force any conversations.
On average, from the other counties, like the data's not there. I mean,
you mean for the sheriff here?
Yeah, with the sheriff and other counties with combined, the data's not give you a good idea.
It depends on how the county collects the data. We're collecting it the way we are on purpose, where they're separated. But in most counties, the data is not separated. So it would be hard for me to say what kind of a positive or negative impact the sheriff is having, because they're all blended. But we're doing it separately for the specific purpose of being able to keep up with it. Generally speaking, the sheriff's offices are a positive to the county because of their normal demographics and their risk factor on health insurance. Don't confuse that with workers' comp and the hazard of the job, but just the health insurance portion. Sheriff's offices are typically a very good addition. They bring everything down. The main problem that the sheriff's office has is that they're manually rated. That is, it's not their demographics, it's not their losses, none of those things. It's simply that they've been manually rated for years. And that the sheriff's office is rated the same as everybody else in the 5.5 million people pool in the state of Florida. And that just does not make sense. It should be lower. But to be able to come up with a number, we got to have loss issues. Mm-hmm. That's where all this is.
Okay. There's no advantage to blending them now. It's as far as how you're tracking them. I mean,
if we blend them, we'll lose the ability to track them. I mean, for one thing, that'll happen. I'm comfortable saying if the decision was made for whatever reason that you did want to blend them, I'm comfortable that it's going to be beneficial. I just couldn't tell you a number for it. Because once you blend them, it's good blending. I mean, you can't.
Sure. Just to clarify, on the option 6 for the sheriff, mm-hmm. if you look at the ENRP program, they do not have that currently. They do not have it next year. If they go to option 7, that would be another benefit for them that mm-hmm. would be cost-saving to the members.
What was that?
The extended non-network.
Right, but what, do you remember what,
so that, yes.
What the number was?
But the...
What the number was?
For
moving to that. But we negotiated that. Mm-hmm. What was the... What not? It was 1.something%.
And losses and an increased losses and 1-something% in premium.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you want to explain what that means? Okay, basically for this population here, it's important because the ENRP program, the removal of that from our current plan allows us to go to a network facility like DMH and received care from a non-network specialty provider, which is an anesthesiologist, emergency room doctor, specialist like that, and we do not have to pay the out-of-network cost. So it puts, if we go to a provider, it's mainly anesthesiologists and surgical...
Radiologists too, right?
Radiologists, right. So that, so for the sheriff's office, that would, that could be, if they had to have specialty care like surgery, emergency room visits, things like that, that could have a potential impact for certain members. So right. We had that removed from our plan. We negotiated that with UnitedHealthcare, but they do not have that option currently in their current plan or their proposed plan. So that would be, that is another difference in the two plans.
Yeah, and they didn't have that before.
Right.
And when we go through the process and revamp next year, you're going to be hearing a very different presentation next year because it's going to have a new strategy implemented into it. There are new statutes that are taking effect that's dealing with those kind of situations as well. So it's very possible that that's going to become irrelevant across the board because of some things that the legislature did. 2 years ago, the Speaker of the House ran into that problem himself, and that made him upset. So he fixed it. But we have to... you got to wait for those kind of laws to come up and roll out and get into effect. So that issue is very important right now. But I don't really know. No one really knows what it's going to look like when they implement the new law. My suspicion is that line won't even be considered anymore. It'll be out. Because I'm pretty sure the law prohibits that period. Like if you go to an in-work hospital, everything's considered in network under the new law. Should be. That's exactly right. I don't know why there wasn't. Well, I do know, but that's another conversation. But that's what I've got. Any other questions?
None here.
Mr. Albrecht, I did notice on option 7 it went back to the $50 copay on the prescription. If you increase that copay, would that 8.4 go down?
My guess is yes. I can just tell you with certainty, yes. It's going to go down. But once again, the logic in 7 was comparing it to. We had to pick to compare it to current or compare it to proposed. We had to pick one because they're two different things. So which one do you pick? Kind of thing.
My question was, though, if the county had to take option 3, which is what they chose, that takes it up to $70.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you blend them, the point was to make the sheriff and the county equal.
Correct.
So they would still take that $70 option in the plans that would make that go forward.
Yeah, hey, if you guys said, hey, we want to do option 7, we're going to do everything we can to move the 8.4. But for this conversation purposes, we had to start with one or the other. So the only thing I'm going to do is start with your current, because your budget is your budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right now. And we're looking at what your budget is going to be next year. So we had to compare that to one. The plan design had to be compared to one or the other. We couldn't do it both. So we picked current. That's how we, I didn't know what else to do. I thought that was a logical one. But to answer your question, yes, if you move it to the 70, it will come down. And of course, we would do that.
That's a good question.
Didn't it make that it was about a 2% difference between the plans?
About 2%. So that 8.4 would come down about 2% if you were to combine them.
That makes you 6.4. That makes your total increase about the same as if you stay apart. You got 2.1 and 4.7.
No, those numbers aren't added together. They're averaged. So the 2.1 and 4.7 would have to be weighted average, but that doesn't even work because the 4.7 isn't a credible number, and the 2.1 is. So that it doesn't actually work that way, but. If you took the the 216, assuming we got a 2% reduction, you could deduct about $55,000 from it. When you, if you were to change the, to the 70, it's about a $55,000 reduction. So, that comes in like 162, something like that, 162,000. And of course, I'm guessing, we'll have to get Carrier to actually do the math on it. But instead of 216, it's, it come in at 162, roughly. Increase. That make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I've got.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is anybody ready for a quick break, or do we need to keep going forward? Anybody want to take a 5-minute break?
Sure.
Let's take a 5-minute break and then we'll come back.
I don't know.
ask the sheriff's office to come forward.
How you doing today? Thank y'all for having us here, trying to help with our insurance, with our, most of our coverage, the decrease due to insurance, our family coverage, to try to take care of our employees, hopefully one day on an equal basis, such as the county does. So, if you got any questions or anything on it, I'll try to answer that with you.
Any questions from the board?
We have worked with, Mr. Lakey, we scaled some things back that we asked for, and we're still willing on it. We're also trying to get all of our school resources out there, we're trying to find money to get that, we had to add some additional expenses there, and we're working our way through that, being able to speak, calling, guns and vests, they all have to be out there, and it all costs money to get this done.
I was reading the paper this early this morning, and they had an article in there about the resource officers at the schools, and it said that that they was requiring one officer per school.
Right, per 1,000 students. If you have more than 1,000 students in one school, then you have to have two resource officers. So yes, 1,000 and under, then you can run it with just one.
Okay, so we've got over 1,000.
No, ma'am. But you got to have one in each school.
Okay. We're asking for two in the high school, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. We have two in high school. I've only one in Danville to try to keep. And he says that it's actually made a big difference this year by putting two in the high school, according to the feedback I'm getting from.
We're doing two at the high school, Ms. Eagle, but we're only doing one between the alternative and the primary school. They butt up. It's on the same campus. So
it equals out the same that if you had one.
Right. Yes, ma'am. One in each school, it equals out if we did that, or we have two in the high school and combine those two on the same campus.
I understand. Any other questions for the sheriff?
So in the budget request, Danielle, are these including, are these, does this remove the capital improvement?
Yes. Sheriff didn't have any capital requests because he gets a percentage of the 1 cent money. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Okay.
So their increase is $454,669, and of that increase, $69,412 is for new positions, $31,257 is for Deputy Lundy's insurance that the statute requires them to fund because of the injury, $54,000 increase for fuel, and $300,000 is for insurance. Their 4.7% increase is about $40,000 according to what Joe gave us, and the additional to make up the $300,000, they're asking the county to fund the difference like they do for county employees. So over the years, every increase, the county's always picked up the increase for the employee, and so they're now asking for the county to fund that for them.
So every year the sheriff buys new cars. And let's see how I can articulate this. Every year the sheriff buys new cars, and so, and you don't ask for that in a separate, you don't break that out in your budget whenever you do your budget.
We don't use our 1 cent sales tax money to purchase automobile this term ago. We should be in pretty good shape for our capital. According to what we got, once the project is done.
Okay.
I have a question. You had an increase in fuel costs.
Yes.
Explain that a little bit more thoroughly.
Well, we got more patrol. We're doing more patrol. Of course, the price of gas, it fluctuates. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. But we're doing more patrol. We're trying to stay in the outer banks of the county to get better patrol, better use for our deputies. It just takes more fuel to operate.
And we ran four more officers for school resources. That's four more vehicles that have to travel back and forth every day too.
To where? We,
to the schools.
From home?
Yes, sir. And to events or wherever that they have to go to the school.
That would be pretty minimal, I think. Every employee deputy has a vehicle. Just any, not too less. And you drive them home.
Yes, sir.
Because if you get home, you get a car when you need it. You don't have time to run to the courthouse to pick up the car. I understand all that.
Yes, sir.
But we don't know whether the fuel prices are going to go up or down.
Which we don't.
Now, you keep answering the question. We got more vehicles on the road, and we're trying to use them to maximum advantage to keep people safe. And whether 50,000, that's just your best guess.
Yes, sir.
Sure. If I could ask a question, probably just reiterating what Steve just asked. I know in years past and in working with other sheriff's budgets in other counties, you would program in so many cars in that budget. And of course, I'm just going to use Jackson, for example. They always program in six cars. They didn't have a separate 1 cent for capital purchases or whatever. I know in years past, y'all had probably, not you, but other sheriffs have probably programmed in a number of cars in every budget. Now that we have the 1 cent money, is there a chance of removing that program purchase out and offsetting, using that to offset insurance?
I don't think so. See how we do it.
It wasn't budgeted last year either. We used the 1 cent sales tax, okay, and then we used some grant money stuff that we had to purchase vehicles last year.
You may not know this, speaking about other sheriff or whatever, but were there capital purchases in past budgets like that?
I don't know that the sheriff ever actually budgeted for big ticket items. If he had money left over in the budget in years past, he would buy cars and stuff like that if he had the money.
So it was a rollover type situation. Yeah, okay.
Well, you always bought them at the end of the year.
That question better than I can. She did all that.
Used to, in prior years, the sheriff would budget capital outlay, but then 4 years ago or so, when there was such a big deficit, and Bobby ended up cutting, when he cut his budget, capital outlay,
so you know. I would point out, though, that if you don't mind on the insurance.
Hold on.
Okay.
What is SD?
Do you have some CAD issues or something you're upgrading?
We're doing that already. Actually, we put in the purchase order request and purchasing Smart Cop already. We're doing it off the 1 cent sales tax money. And they agreed to take quarterly payments so that we didn't deplete that entire 1 cent sales tax money all at one time.
Oh. I think the purchase order was $66,000.
And that covered the initial signing of the contract and getting them here for training and the first quarterly payment. And that won't actually, the quarterly payment doesn't count until it actually goes live when we're using it. So that would be the first quarterly payment and then spread out after that.
Okay. You want to say something about insurance?
I was just going to point out, and I may be totally off base here, but we're asking for $300,000+ to equalize the insurance so we can afford to give the sheriff's office employees so they can afford family coverage or the other add-on coverage. If you went with the tier medication, Mr. Albrecht, if I make a mistake, just yell and say I'm stupid and we do something different. But anyway, if you take that 216 and you minus the, we'll just use 55,000 there. Mr. Albrecht said 60, I think. But if you use 55,000 there and you turn over the other page, which says it's going to cost you $332,735, and you deduct 45,000 from that, and that covers the family coverage for the sheriff's office or the whatever, we just looked at it. So now you're at a total increase of a little over, well, my math, $280,000 versus $300,000 the sheriff's asking just by himself. And you blend the two policies together and everybody has the same plan.
Can you
make a
motion?
Yes, sir. I'll go safe right here.
Come on.
So that number that he's referencing,
did you pass it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have some
comments. Okay,
did you know that?
Oh, not the back, not hard.
Just okay. That difference, I don't know what the 300 is, but I look at a contribution to the employees and that can add for the premium. I don't know which one you're talking about. So that number is premium business, not the contribution business.
Let's say it's MTCS of migration to family.
Yeah, so that what it is that that number is that number plus the additional premium.
To bring in the family cover.
Right, but that number doesn't represent any cash contribution on behalf of the employees to lower their deduction. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
So there's two parts. One part I do, and one part y'all do. The part I do is the impact on the premium. Okay? The number that we're talking about over here of the 332 minus...
We said 45, because we have
5, 5, and 5. We're like 270.
Yeah.
Okay, so that number at the top on this sheet here, it's 332. If option 7 was selected and we went with a $70 pharmacy copay, that 332 would drop down to, let's just ballpark it at 270. But what that number represents from my perspective is the premium difference, not any kind of employee contribution to pay a portion of the premium on behalf of the employee. So there's two different things. One is the total premium from the insurance company to you guys. That would be the 270. But then the other issue that you have to consider, and I don't know which one you guys are talking about, is for you to contribute money toward the premium on behalf of the employee. So let's say that 270 is the premium choice. And then you said, well, we want to give the employees X dollars so they don't have to pay the full impact of the family coverage. Family coverage is 1,000 difference. You want to give them, say, $100 stipend to lower it to 900. That 100, that's not that number. That number is the premium impact. But I don't know which one you're talking about. I don't know which number you're talking about in your budget.
But we're talking about the amount of money that it costs to cover, and we'll have to do the math now that we know what we've got. We've got 5, 5, and 5. 5 for family, 5 for employee spouse, and 5 for employee children. That's what the survey, y'all had asked for a new survey. That's what the survey just said. Did she send you that?
Yeah.
She just sent it out this morning.
You have a problem.
So you have to do the math. That would be part of that 300,000.
But that's going to be. He just showed me the survey, and from a premium impact, you're not talking about a lot of money, because it's 5, 5, and 5. It's 5 for family, 5 for spouse, and 5 for child. Family coverage is generally seen as a positive to a plan because you have a lot of healthy kids on the plan. So family plus children coverage is usually seen as a positive per capita premium allocations. Spouses are seen as negatives. And it's just based on the fact that most times when a spouse is on their other insurance, it's because they cost more. It costs more if they got their own. So when a spouse comes on the plan, it's a negative. So you got 10 positive and 5 negatives. So it would net out to be, I think it would reduce that number the way it's laid out. It would reduce the ratio, but you change the number from 10 to 15. So the total would go up.
See, what we want to know is what's the bottom line figure?
Mm-hmm.
Bottom
the
line.
Premium?
If you did all this, what would be the impact to the budget?
We have to figure out how much it is that the subsidy that you provide to the other county employees are.
Is that plus that?
And multiply it with the, you know, the family or the employee spouse or employee child, how much you guys contribute towards that. Now you have to go back and figure those for a 12-month period for each employee.
Because that number on that sheet, we have to do some adjustments to it as well, because we're not talking about 10 people, we're talking about 15 people. But it's not as simple as just increasing it 15, because each category has a different impact.
Mm-hmm.
But so that number that I provided is just the premium. impacts.
Right, I'm sure.
Yeah. So you would have to figure out what the, I call it a contribution, you call it a subsidy, it's whatever that number is.
Same.
You call it a subsidy.
Yeah.
It's basically, with Lieutenant Lundy, his was $34,000, so it's basically $34,000 for each, all of your 85. Because you got the budget, whether they're married or not, you got the budget for the full family plan. Because they might get married and have a family.
Yeah.
How many employees do y'all pay 100% of their top earnings?
I don't know if they have that information on it.
County does the budget for 100% of any of your employees, but he's got some, he pays all of them. As well as they pay all the dental for the sheriff's employees, where we don't pay any dental on your employees.
What was that again? The sheriff has a plan.
He pays 100% insurance for some of his employees. He also pays the dental policy for his employees, where you don't pay any of that. The employee in your group is responsible for all the dental insurance.
And we don't pay 100% for our family or for our spouse.
Yeah.
And if we have dental insurance, which I think I have,
it's available.
It's available, but it comes out of my pocket, not county's. Same with Peter. Right. So we're talking about making everything the same. That would be something all down the line we'd probably have to address. Because in essence,
excuse me.
Go ahead.
But the increases that you presented now in this budget request are 100% for your employees.
Not 100%
for your family.
Just
to get them the same paying the same monthly payment as the county employees pay. No, he's not trying to get 100%. Now, Robert Lundy's is 100% because it's mandated by law.
But we're talking about subsidy according to ours. A single is less than what the sheriff gets. A single policy. So if you just pay what you pay on your employees, it may bring those figures down. I don't know. They've been working on that. But the single rate that you pay all for your employees has just single coverage. His single coverage is more.
Yeah, ours is the plan, the option six plan would be $856, and yours is $710, so it's $100-something more for the sheriff than it is for the county employee.
So if you were going to consider paying the same, it should probably be the same that you pay for your employees.
Well, that's why we're advocating blending them together so that everybody's on the same page at the same time.
Well, then, will the sheriff department continue to have a dental plan, and we won't?
Good question.
Well, I mean, I think that's up to the board. I mean, if I was given the choice of having to pay my dental insurance or getting subsidy for my family coverage, then I'm going to pay the dental, but you're only talking $30 a month or so for dental, $70 a month for dental. You know, I think that's an even trade. Or I think it's a trade the employees would definitely make, is make it all on the same playing field. I don't think that they'd have any problem with that at all.
Certainly, y'all know that we're not going to make decisions.
Oh, yeah. We just presented.
We need to go look at your data for consideration. And we
can get the figure.
Some more data.
We'll get the figure.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
That'd be helpful.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, supervisor of elections.
Good morning.
Bring some good news.
You know I cry, huh? All right, so I'll just kind of go through my little spiel and then if you've got questions, we'll have that. in preparing the annual budget, we continuously strive to make the best use of our public funds. My staff and I are always looking for ways to operate more efficiently while continuing to provide the highest level of professional services to the citizens of Taylor County. Even though there is no significant budget increase noted, I have provided justifications for some line item increases and have noted where there are some decreases as well. In my personal services category, some of these line items do show a slight increase. Health insurance and retirement increases make up some of the increases seen. SOE staffing remains the same. However, I did have to recategorize some of my poll workers, those that are now working during early voting and not on election day only, had to be recategorized so that I had to put them in personnel services instead of in poll workers. Since I submitted the budget, Trina and I have talked a little bit more and we tweaked that a little bit. I had included some taxes on that line item, but after talking to her, we felt like we could categorize them even differently and not have to collect any taxes on their salary. So actually, I'm able to bring the personnel services down another $1,489.17. So $1,489.17, which I know is not a tremendous amount when you're looking at the budget, but that does help a little bit. Operating expenses, these line items actually saw a decrease. I attempted to find areas to shave off any excess possible, but in other areas an increase was expected due to circumstances beyond our control. We are anticipating a lengthy ballot in the general election. As of right now, it appears that we will be looking at a two-page ballot. And so with that, of course, printing and mailing and those kind of things go up. We're also anticipating more printing to educate the voters on some of the items that are going to be on the general election ballot, like your 14 issues that are scheduled to be printed in the November election. In order to maintain the highest quality of service to the voters of Taylor County, in the last budget cycle, we started cycling out some of our oldest aging equipment and replacing it with equipment we can trust and depend on. I plan to continue into the next budget cycle in hopes of replacing any further monitors or servers that need to be replaced. I think we're down now to maybe two items that need to be cycled out and need to be replaced. Capital outlay, at this point I have nothing noted in the capital outlay department. Under election expense, these line items also saw a slight decrease. Again, I attempted to find areas to shave off any excess that was possible. Specific needs that were addressed as increases were covered with expenses that I either deleted off or were able to do away with completely, such as facility rental that I no longer have to, storage rental that I no longer have to pay for. Also, off-site rental for training poll workers, which I don't have to do any longer. So those decreases or removals helped even out some of the other line items where there might have been some increases. Security is a new line item that you see in the budget. Unfortunately, our new reality includes security, and therefore you now see a specific line item for network and physical security. In the network department, through a grant, we were able to purchase a server, which we call Albert, which will be monitored through the Department of Homeland Security, and more specifically with the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center, better known as MSISAC. This server exists to improve the overall climate of cybersecurity and is a key resource for cyber threat prevention, protection, response, and recovery. This grant covered the expense of purchasing the server, the software needed to run the monitoring, and will compensate for the first 12 months of monitoring. However, the county will be responsible for any reoccurring expenses such as the monitoring fee after the first 12 months. In this specific budget, you will see only what it costs for the last quarter as an expense, as the grant is being covered in the first 9 months of the monitoring service. So I think you see a line item there of about $1,800, which covers the last 3 months of that monitoring.
Excuse me. Danielle, what page are we on?
G281.
Okay, go ahead. Excuse me.
Physical security. Currently, your elections office has no physical security measures in place other than the locks on the doors. I feel it is of great importance that we install some basic and advanced security mechanisms, such as security cameras, push button, keyless locks, and deadbolts on the secure rooms, such as your communications room and your ballot room and the warehouse area where your voting equipment is stored. I have had several resources come to a site visit in order to assist me in determining exactly what measures would best serve as an elections office, and at this time are estimating what the cost of those security features will be. I had 3 security companies come and do a walkthrough and a site visit, and I had Department of Homeland Security come and do a site visit as well. I budgeted $10,000 for that, which I thought seemed high until I got a quote on a security system. And so I'm thinking maybe that's not as high as I thought I was budgeting for. I will remind you that I came before you a couple of weeks ago and, you know, I was applying for a security grant. I haven't gotten it yet. If I get that grant, it will cover some of these items that I had anticipated having to cover when I presented the budget. So if the grant comes through and I'm able to do some of those things, I may or may not need all of this $10,000. I just don't know at this point when they'll approve the grant and when I'll get any of the money.
What estimates have you got that were more than $10,000?
All 3 of the security estimates that I got for security on the building were above $10,000.
A good bit above $10,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And yeah. For the grants, is that a real competitive grant?
No, it's not. Every county is going to get some money. I just don't know what they will approve on my submittal and when I will get it. Every county has been allocated X number of dollars from the federal government. I'll get all that's been allocated. I just don't know that they will approve it to pay for what I've asked for it to be approved for. So if they don't approve one of the items on my list, then I can replace it with something else. But the top item on my priority list is the security system, which is the door locks, cameras, 2-factor authentication, access card entry into the most vulnerable areas of the office, those kind of things. So it's kind of a bulk request.
Question. Our mindset, I think, now is that let's try to put a number in the budget for a worst case scenario, so you don't have to come back to us and ask us to go into contingency fund. You think the $10,000 plus the grant money will suffice?
More than enough.
More than enough.
Mm-hmm. There are some things that the grant won't pay for that I'll have to do out of the budget. But I'm definitely going to try to do all I can out of the budget so that those things that the grant won't pay for, I'll have a little bit of a buffer.
So you got a little buffer building there now?
Yeah.
I'll remind you that when you come back to the house.
Let's hope that doesn't happen.
And one thing we can keep in mind too, that anything that's considered capital, we have our 1 cent money. So.
Yeah, right. We do.
I think we're actually in very good shape with major purchases, with the new voting equipment. If we can get the building secure, there's very few things that are really on my agenda that I see that are still very vulnerable to cybersecurity. But I think we can, I'm hoping we can absorb that within from either the grant or what I've got in our items here.
What about your shelter over the warehouse? That's not included in your budget?
Well, it would be. That's kind of included. If I get the grant, then I'll be able to use some of this for those types of things that I still consider security features for the building. Of course, I'm having a terrible time getting anybody to even come out and look and give me a quote for that. You would think people would be running to do those things, but they're not.
Capital loans.
Yeah.
Some carries are weak for people.
Would the state offer any kind of grant on security?
That's what the grant is.
Is it state or federal?
It's money coming down from the federal government, but the state has their hand, they're controlling it.
In other words, it's not special.
It's much more than what we are getting. They just allocated a small piece of it to every county. I'm sure with anticipation that they're going to use some of it. So if they approve, well, I know that they'll approve a plan. I just may have to keep tweaking the plan until they put the check mark by all the line items that I want to do. It's got to be their specifications, and unfortunately, when the money hit their hands, then they were able to put whatever specs they wanted on the money, not necessarily what the federal government said it could be used for. But we're in line to get almost $65,000. It's just getting the plan met by what they think it needs to be, and then getting the money. Which
they give you an idea on the time frame of that, or they do?
Well, the only time frame they've given us is the submittal has to be done by Wednesday. They gave us 2 weeks to submit the paperwork for the grant, and then they're telling us that it has to be spent, implemented, and in place by November the 6th, which is general election.
Sure.
So there's really only about a 30-day window in between now and November the 6th that I can even be messing with my network and things like that. So I think that's by design.
Even to get the money, it's going to be hard to get a security company to even install it.
Yeah.
By November.
I've got the quotes lined up, and I've put them all on the notice that whatever we go with, they've got to move when I say they can move, because once the August election is over, they've got about 30 days that they can work, and then I've got to lock things down again. So I've kind of put everybody on notice that when they've quoted it, they know they're going to have a 30-day window to get it in there.
Good.
Can I ask a question? If you vote at a polling place, generally it is a person, I guess they're paid for by your office or the sheriff, and they're deputized, sort of maintain order. At early voting, you said you do not have a security person?
No, early, you come out the poll deputies? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, poll deputies. Now, at early voting, you seem like...
I did not always in the courthouse. I have to have that out there, yes.
You got something in the budget for that? Or
yes. No, it's mine.
You got it?
Mm-hmm.
I think you desperately need somebody out
it's
here.
It's mine, yeah.
You get an IRA voter.
Yeah.
Something wrong with his ballot. You need somebody to jerk them around.
Yeah. It's in my budget already.
You know, now that's the... I was at a trade show and I saw that they have some type of plexiglass that will resist. Have you...
Anti-shatter film.
Yeah, you have.
That's
you.
What DHS suggested on the front windows of the building.
Good thought.
Yep. Yeah, that's one of the line items that
okay.
I thought.
Okay. I think it might need it. Yeah. Just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'll tell you something else. When you said you do all your training in house now, I was out there at the canvassing board training. I enjoyed it. And I felt good about it. So.
Got classes starting today?
Canvassing
board? No, poll worker.
Okay.
Fan of well.
Any other questions?
No, Bill is looking good.
It is.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
I'm proud of it. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next is VMH.
What page? Oh, they have a... No, it's just one page now.
Thank you, Jim. Except for the budget.
There's the presentation.
I want to get up with you.
And you just push that.
Like Nintendo, which I don't do very well either. Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Ken Arnold. I'm chair of the board of Dr. Memorial Hospital. And several board members are here with me, and I appreciate their backup. Most of all, I appreciate you and the support and dedication y'all have demonstrated in the past with regard to supporting this hospital. Y'all have as passionate of recognition and desire to keep a facility here in Cook County as I do, and as we all do. A viable and functional, fully functional hospital in any community is absolutely necessary for that community to continue to grow and survive. The reason we're here today is because we're, first of all, let me thank all of you and acknowledge Annie Mae's award the other day. I saw that in the paper. Congratulations.
Thank you.
The hospital has been operating for many years now and struggling because of regulatory change and reimbursement changes at the federal level and the state level. We have not been able to, over the last, I don't know how many years, been able to fund the capital budget, although we all recognize the need, and y'all have demonstrated recognition of that need by responding to the hospital's requests in the past for capital investments to keep the hospital current, and the license current, and us open. With the retirement of the bond issue, that revenue stream, or that source of revenue for our capital budget has been changed somewhat. That capital equipment need remains the same. Regulatory changes require the hospital to keep equipment current and systems functional. And the absence of those functional systems will, I assure you, guarantee that the hospital will lose its license. That's just a fact of life. ACA looks over us like a mother hen, and if any of those systems are not functional, they'll come down here and we will be emptying the hospital and transferring patients, and none of us want to see that happen. Again, your response to our equipment needs in the past has made it possible to keep those doors open and accept patients and treat those patients appropriately, and we appreciate that very much. Let's go to the slide real quick if we can. The first slide is just a real quick look at what the revenue status of the hospital has been over the last 5 years, last 4 years, really. And as you can see, operationally we have generated consistently significant losses year after year after year. That has come primarily because of significant changes in our revenue streams from third payer parties, Medicare, Medicaid, and health insurance companies. We have cut costs and cut costs and cut costs, and we've cut those costs significantly. But the way the healthcare system in this country is working today, we can't cut costs faster than our revenue streams are being cut, and it makes it very, very difficult. We engaged in a partnership agreement with Tallahassee Memorial Regional Hospital back three or 4 years ago. And that agreement has been a significant help in keeping us operational. CMH has contributed well over $1 million in cash to this hospital to offset half of what those losses are. And to echo their commitment, they are bullish on healthcare in Tarrant County just as we are. And the commitment is strong, and we expect that they will continue to be supported. That is all on the operational side. There is no
funding for capital equipment at all. What we're asking from y'all is recognition, as you have demonstrated in the past, of a need to fund those capital equipment. As you can see, our budget, we have no contingency. We are close to the bone operationally, and we have nothing for capital improvements or upkeep. So we are asking that you guys help us respond to those capital equipment needs and make that budget contingency something other than zero. This is what our capital needs, and this reflects past needs, so we carried it out for a 5-year period. Our capital needs in the past have run about $1 million a year and will continue to do so. We're looking at about $1.2 million in capital equipment needs as the future approaches. What we're asking is, since y'all have decided to, and rightly so, and truly appreciate it, to continue the 1 cent sales tax after having retired the bond, what we're asking is that you not abandon your support of the hospital and continue to make a portion of that money available to us to meet those continued capital equipment needs. We're asking for an equitable contribution consistent with the past to keep us functional and in licensure, as well as with equipment to keep our positions working and healthy, hopefully attract new ones. We've had some success in the recent past with attracting a couple of new ones, and we'd like to see that continue. As you can see, we anticipate capital equipment needs in the range of $1.1 million per year for the next 5 years, and we're asking that you commit a portion of that 1 cent sales tax revenue to meet that commitment over that 5-year period. We have a detailed spreadsheet of what we anticipate our capital equipment needs are going to be for the next 5 years, and we will keep that 5-year capital equipment need current. We would like to see the commitment grow each year in order to keep our 5-year plan in place, recognizing that, you know, 5-year plans are best guesses. That plan will shift and change as needs change and equipment fails. A lot of the equipment in that existing hospital came over from the old hospital, the two-story facility on Ash Street. Much of that equipment has well exceeded its useful life, and maintaining those systems is far more expensive than replacing them. In fact, in some areas, impossible. So we know we're going to have to replace a lot of that stuff. And we know we're going to have to do it probably pretty soon. That's what we're asking. An earnest and supportive commitment from you guys to keep this facility going. We need your help, and y'all have demonstrated a strong willingness to help us in the past. You're not the only one about this. The foundation has been gracious in providing some additional funding for capital needs, small but meaningful. And the Day Foundation gave the hospital a very sizable contribution back a couple of years ago that we have shepherded very, very carefully to keep our capital equipment needs current. Most of the capital equipment needs expressed in that budget, by the way, but a lot of it is for ambulances. And we put in a grant to replace one of the ambulances we do every year, and that grant was turned down. So didn't change the need to replace it, but we're going to wind up having to come up with such to buy one by ourselves without any assistance from any grant authorities. We'll continue to aggressively pursue grants, but we don't have any on board that we can see at this point to fund that ambulance. We need to replace it as soon as possible. There is some residual, I understand, in the bond fund from the retirement bonds, and we would expect to cap that for replacing those vehicles. It's got to be done. When we don't have an ambulance, we can't.
How much?
I'm not sure exactly how much is in there.
No. How much is an ambulance?
Which is about what an ambulance costs.
Well, that's my question. How much is an ambulance?
I think right at 200.
If we put in for another bariatric ambulance, we thought we'd have our best luck at it, because which was going to run somewhere between 240 and 260, and it was a 75%, 25. A regular smaller ambulance is going to run somewhere between 150 and 180. One of the driving forces now is that there are new requirements for the stretchers, and the stretcher has to be locked down so that in the rollover, the stretcher stays in place as it rolls over. And that the stretcher in the ambulance is $30,000 alone. So in the last bariatric ambulance we got was a grant. In the content, we were ahead of that, but in new ones. So right now, somewhere between 150 and 180, we've gotten close on. Actually, we just bought a 2003 GMC, like the old GMC we had, which only had 100,000 miles on it. And we're going to use it as our backup, because our backup is just totally gone. Ambulances are 2002, 2003. That's the big web, we call it, which we only used in an emergency of the hurricane. And then the other three are 2012, of which both, two of them have over 200 and some thousand miles. We did rebuild the transmission engine and the drivetrain on that one a while back out of the day money. It's probably about 75,000 miles on the hill. The newer ambulance has a little over 100,000 miles on the hill. I didn't bring my sheet, but it's pretty close to the hill. What I understand, the average life of an ambulance is three to four years. And when you get to about 200,000 miles, you're really pushing it. And a lot of our miles are sort of transfers.
We don't want our ambulance breaking down the way the hospital do again. Can I ask a couple questions if this is an appropriate time? Now, out of the $300,000+ that you have for capital needs from the paid off, have you tapped into that, used any of that yet?
Not yet.
But you're saving that for the ambulance need.
Well, it was one of the concerns about the ambulance need, but we have well over $300,000 we could spend that on.
All right, I never did understand this, and maybe Ted can help me with this. But the fact that it's safe, that when we split this sales tax, 1 cent sales tax, that county's supposed to get 66 2/3%, and the city 33 1/3%. However, I'm under the impression that split's made 60-40. You know why that is?
Don't know, Malcolm. You know?
I'm rather not here to answer that, but that's one question I got. It would make quite a bit of difference. And the second part of the tax bill.
Yeah. Going back to the original agreement, gas tax.
Not gas tax.
Gas tax. The city and the county agreed on 60-40.
For gas tax.
Yeah. Then we moved into the sales tax. And of course, 100% of it went to jail. And to get back to the 60-40, the county's got to give up. And of course, the county has a need and doesn't want to give up, so it just falls back to statute, which is a 66-34.
Yes.
And that's the way it should be in this.
That's the way it should be now, right? That's my thing. But anyway, if you approach the city, you can see if they're out of their 33 1/3% of this money we're talking about. Are they willing to help us out?
I don't honestly know the answer to that question, Malcolm. I am led to believe that in the past, and I'm talking distant past before I was on the hospital board, there was some query there, but I don't know that it went very far. I personally don't have any of the board, the current board members that I'm aware of.
approach the city, but that's on the table for us to do. We will aggressively pursue with the city some contribution here to offset.
Well, that would certainly help us tremendously.
It could help everybody.
It'd help everybody, yeah. So if you need $1 million, using that as a round number, at 60-40 split, we put up 600,000, they put up 400,000, the math work?
That, the math works pretty well.
Pretty well.
You do it that way, yeah.
Yeah, pretty good math sometimes.
Just as a sideline on that, one of the other big items is to put in the backup chiller, the hospital put a chiller in. I guess 4 years ago now, four.
4 years ago.
Because it's still got, and the three old original units, one doesn't work at all, one barely unit works, and the other one, we pray that it works when we have the children now. So that's one of the things Ken was talking about. And we've got a quote on that, that's going to be $300,000 to put in a backup children unit.
That's pretty high priority.
Pretty high priority, especially because the last hurricane season and the governor with the issues related to the nursing homes and that. So it's high priority. We understand that it may actually, some changes may be coming down from the federal government through Medicare and CMS, requiring that our environmentals. We're looking at whether or not we can keep our environmentals on based on the size of the generator. And be able to do that, but that's going to cost us some money. We anticipate maybe $50,000-$60,000 to do that. And if that does happen, that helps us a little bit. If that would really resolve the problem of redundancy.
And the alternative is a second generator. It's going to be expensive too.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Daniel if I may amend it here.
Yeah, sure.
How much is one half of the proceeds from the local option 1 cent sales tax? Because Kevin was the ones that sales taxes.
Half of it will be around $757,000.
$757,000. And out of that other half of that other half is already dedicated to the shed.
Correct.
So that means the county commission an amount equal to what the sheriff has. Which is
and this, just keep in mind, we haven't gotten there yet, but we budgeted all of our capital out of all the other funds except the general fund using this money. That's almost $600,000 on the county side. So then we're going to have to go back and adjust all of our other funds' capital.
Well, if we can't do half, I mean, something's better than nothing.
Well, keeping the hospital open is
essential.
And if we can get by keeping it open from 1 year to the next with less than that, we will do that.
We don't want
to have to
do it. Because I'm not your next patient out here.
That's right.
And we want good ambulances.
Right. Yes, we do. We also want the environmental system to work.
When do you anticipate getting with the city? See if they're willing to participate with us on this thing.
We have been, the board has been talking amongst ourselves about how to make that approach and pursue it. I would say as soon as we possibly can.
Well, I don't know if we can get done by the time we finish all these budget discussions.
I wouldn't expect that we would by that point in time.
I would hate for us to pass something and say this is contingent upon the city contributing an X number of dollars. That's like pointing a pistol at
it. I would not do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. We have to make a decision here. This is what we can do in hopes they'll do the right thing in that hospital.
What we're asking for is strictly capital budget items.
No operating money.
No operating money whatsoever. And we have, in the past, conformed to the county's acquisition process, which we have no difficulty with whatsoever. We think that's the right way to go, and we like working with you guys on that to make sure that we get the best price, the best piece of equipment for me. So that's what got here for us.
Did you provide a list of the equipment that you're
making? We did. It's the X-ray that you see right there.
I didn't have it in the second packet because all the other commissioners had it, but I'll get I do have more copies back here.
You'll notice the rightmost column, or leftmost column, I guess. No, I'm sorry. The third and fourth columns on that spreadsheet identify the prioritization of that capital equipment.
Question, Daniel, what is the surplus from You started to say that a while ago, that is available to them now.
They have $328,000.
And when will that be available to them?
It's available now.
Okay.
We could go ahead and purchase the land. We haven't pursued that yet because we've been waiting to see what we're going to have on the grant request.
And so if we gave you half or a quarter or whatever it would be, come October 1st, say a quarter is $250,000 or whatever it is, then would that be available to them right away, or is that over the course of the year?
That's over the course of the year. That's right. What we're expecting to receive over the
forecast. Right. So you wouldn't have $600,000 in October.
Again, these kind of equipment needs, the specific dates that we need to satisfy the need is gonna vary. It depends on whether or not the right. system die and we're left with none. That essentially what happened with the new air handler that we got. Mm-hmm. And we wound up having to tap our operational fund and secure a loan, and that's a portion of why we stay red. We continue to service that debt.
Mm-hmm.
To keep that to pay off that children.
I'm not sure if I could ask a question. I know we talked about it, that we buy a CAT scan machine and it has so much life, and of course we have no interest in, at the end of that lifespan, the county having a CAT scan machine. And we talked about leasing certain things.
Potential option, it just comes down to, looking at whether or not we have that revenue stream available to cover the lease.
Yeah, what I'm wondering, and we could go over another time, but when you see a big ticket item in 1 year, is that a purchase or is that a lease, or can we spread these costs out over a 10-year period or 7-year period?
We're looking at a capital purchase as far as the budgeting process to understand, not knowing what, the other part of that with the leases are our overall financial position. Can we show that we can pay for it over those periods of time? So it could be either or. It just depends on the circumstances of the time we need to make.
Well, for example, we're leasing motor graders over a certain period of time.
Right.
And at the end, we'll own them or whatever. But I'm just seeing, instead of big ticket items in 1 year, if we can spread this out over a longer period of time.
We've done that with some of the items right now. That mm-hmm. We've purchased them on basically as a lease and $1 payout at the end, smaller items. So that is available. We just don't know at that time frame whether we qualify for that kind of arrangement. So
okay.
We also were trying to figure out when we needed items. Now, obviously this is five years out, so things can change, and some of it may be one or two of those big things might be, instead of year four, year five. But we also wanted to plan it out that we have a process and understood where we should be replacing things. Some of the smaller items are basically end-of-life things, like the defibrillators. We have pretty much all the same defibrillators that were bought. LIPAC no longer is going to make the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
That's how all of this medical equipment is. They just stop servicing components and other things. And so you're basically stuck with having to buy. It's called
designed obsolescence.
Yeah.
Right.
Madam Chair, didn't we lease a fire truck as well? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you can look at leasing ambulances as well.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that. We haven't really looked at it. The main thing is beginning to look at what the purchase price would be if we got a grant.
Sure.
The other is we probably would sit down and look at could we buy smaller engines instead of a variant? It would have been nice to have a second variant because, quite frankly, we had to do a lot of obese transfers and mm-hmm. a lot of our pickups are obese, and it makes it harder, the mechanism of the stretcher and stuff make it harder to get them in. And really, the nice part about the bariatric ambulance is, even for trauma, it's a larger compartment. Two or three people can actually work in it versus the smaller ambulances.
One ask one question about leasing. Can lease be paid for out of 1 cent pay?
Okay. Since we're doing the purchasing,
it just,
in my opinion, yes.
But I'm not when you lease it, it costs more, is all.
Yes.
What's that? When you lease it, it costs way more.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's obvious.
Yeah, you'll have an interest expense if you were buying it on the time plus a little more for theirs, but it does do that.
Well, sometimes.
But that's always an alternative out there. Not having, and we'll have a working government that can give us any money, but how that would work with you all would be another alternative.
So the advantage of the leasing deal is that you make a small payment on the first year and you don't use up all your capital money.
Right.
If you use all your capital money and that chiller goes out and you have to shut the hospital
right.
down,
right.
then you've got some money right. that you could actually right. go to purchase that
chiller. We didn't understand that. And we wanted to make sure we had the right dollar amounts. And again, their projections based on what the companies are telling us the prices are going to be in the future. And some of the stuff that does come down over time, three or 4 years out, it may be less expensive than it is
today. Well, that's the thing. Still trying to compress everything 5 years, if we could spread some of the stuff out in 7 or 10
Typically, a hospital has a 5-year capital budget because of obsolescence in the technology, so that's why we, and actually this, I've been here 2 years, so really this is sort of a 7-year, this is a lot of stuff we've had in there, and so we, you know, now that we're getting out there, some of the bigger pieces of equipment are definitely, the newest, well, the CT and MRI are relatively new, right, they've come in since the hospitals, but there's a number of other pieces of equipment much older.
So when you're speaking of leasing, Sammy, I hope that somebody has prepared what a lease payment versus a note payment is. You know, you can borrow against it, let's say, sales tax too.
I understand you can, but if you put all of that on in 1 year.
But you're not. If you borrow,
you're talking about borrowing the cash. Because sometimes the companies are willing you can negotiate with your lease pricing sometimes.
We did that with the road builders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just depends on who the member is and what piece of equipment.
We're not asking for exotic stuff. We're asking for meat and potatoes, you know, small rural hospital equipment and so I shared with the rest of the guys this morning. My daughter's in her fourth year of med school and doing her surgical rotation right now. And she told me the day before yesterday that she got to play with the Da Vinci machine. She was really excited. We're not asking for stuff like that. That's pretty exotic stuff and amazing stuff to work with. But we're not asking for anything new. We're not asking for any new taxes. We're not asking for anything other than y'all have graciously provided in the past, because of your acknowledgement and willingness to provide a really good healthcare facility for this community. We appreciate it, and I know they do too. So thank
you. To point out that in the end, you all own everything. The hospital doesn't own anything. You all.
That's why I don't want an MRI machine.
if we close, you got one. You probably pay more to get it taken out of the building than it's worth, but you do own it.
If other questions come up after this meeting and y'all need additional information, Tom's available, the finance committee is available, I'm available, and we are anxious and willing to work the goal.
Anybody give me a call, we can sit down and kind of figure it out, and maybe just take it up.
Ma'am?
Yes.
What percent of the money you getting from Medicaid now that you was getting 3 years ago?
Look about it. It's about, we'll start with what we pointed out to you when we were on straight Medicaid before Medicaid managed care came in. We were getting somewhere around 38 to 39 cents on the dollar, and our costs over those years average out. That's not that same for all patients. We ran around somewhere between 41 and 42 cents, depending on the year. When we went to Medicaid managed care, that dropped down into 21, 22, 23 cents per dollar, which meant there was almost a 20 cent difference between what we were spending to take care of the patient and what we were being reimbursed. Now that's changed a little bit. I think the state has forced that. You know, where we about 1 year was 1.1, it was 700 and some thousand, and the high thought six. And I think it's kind of stabilized where it's not, it's in that 500 to 700 thousand is the difference more.
The dollar difference is revenue dollar.
Revenue dollar. Actually, well, cash in hand, not revenue. It's cash in hand that we get from them versus what the cash it took us to take care of. It's gone up a little bit from the 21, 23. We haven't looked at 2017, 18, so that's probably a little bit higher 20s, but it's still significant. I mean, if you look at what the difference between what it costs to take care of a Medicaid patient and what we get reimbursed, that brings us pretty close to a break even. And as we've talked about in individual meetings, the other is we have a lot more people who have insurance. What we see is a significant increase in our health numbers right with you today in non-payment of co-pays and deductibles. I mean, they have basic insurance. I had a conversation with somebody recently about that, who came in and pulled out some of my wife's phone bills and went through it. Because his thought he had a Blue Cross Blue Shield and he had 80-20, and I said, nobody pays 80-20 anymore, and showed the difference. So, you know, not only is Medicaid a problem, it's been that side of what typically came out of the individual's pocket is dramatically increased, and people are having a harder and harder time paying those co-pays as well.
Historically, the positive margin on third-party payers like Blue Cross and other insurance companies, that revenue positive has offset the revenue negative that we see from Medicare and Medicaid. Insurance companies have suddenly realized that they can play the same game Medicare and Medicaid does. They've cut what their payments are to match more closely Medicaid. And the end result is what you see. You know, losses year after year after year. And that's what I'm talking about. We can cut revenue, we can cut expenses till the cows come home, but we can't cut them faster than the revenue stream providers, health insurance companies, Medicare, Medicaid, have cut their funding.
How do you determine the cost of a procedure for an item?
You want to respond to that?
Yeah. Some of it is arbitrary. Okay. In a lot of ways, you look at it and you look at what your costs are, trying to figure out what your margins are. It's not a significant thing anymore because most people don't pay based on the targets. They have arbitrary numbers they set out there across the board. We try to keep them in a reasonable range based on what your labor costs are, what your supply costs are, looking at what your amortization of a piece of equipment is. You know, we're on the studies out there, our prices are in the general range of what everybody else is out there. We may be a little higher on some things. You know, where we have additional expenses, we're trying to provide things like TD Echo, ultrasound, MRI. A lot of rurals are not doing that anymore. And so, you know, we got a full-time person. Sometimes we have, you know, they're busy 0.8, sometimes they're busy 0.6. We try to, in radiology especially, who those people in the area. So it gets a little tough when they do it.
Has that been profitable? Has that been profitable?
Yeah, we showed margins on some of those. We don't show as much. And it's very hard to get at what your real costs are. I mean, you know what your supply costs are, you know what your labor costs are, but there are a lot of intrinsic costs that you can't really get at.
One of the issues we look at is we've been able to attract especially physicians from Tallahassee down here because of the additional equipment that we have and services we offer, and that allows us to keep patients at home. Orthopedics is probably the best example of that. We do a lot of orthopedic surgery here, which is good for us, but mostly it's good for the residents of the county because they can have their procedures done here and then they can have their rehab done here. Their families aren't having to run back and forth to Tallahassee 2 or 3 times a day to visit with them while they're in the hospital or getting a rehab. That's a big advantage for small
Yes,
to be able to make that available. It's good for patients, it's good for community, and we're making it. We just need to work hard to continue.
Okay, any other questions?
No, thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thank
you. Don't have any more. I think I got everybody basically the original packet and the secondary packet.
Who gets it now? I just leave it here.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have to play this in the middle of
the wall. Madam Clerk?
No, I'm sorry.
Do you have anything?
No.
Anybody else? This is it?
We're talking about on my bed.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm about to rest of is the salary increase that y'all approved this last year. It was done in this year, plus the increase in the
Okay. If there are no more questions or concerns, then
I need some explanation.
Okay.
Being a new county commissioner, where does reserve for contingency money come from?
What I calculate an estimate of revenue and expenses for September 30th. And that will give me what I'm estimating to be cash carry forward. So this year I'm estimating at $6.7 million. October 1, we automatically, part of that 6.7, we put 1.2 aside for reserve for contingency. We put $2 million aside for reserve for cash balance. We put $75,000 aside for compensated absences. The jail has a reserve for capital improvements that they used to get room and board for at the jail. That's set aside. And then we take what our capital is, because I go ahead and adjust the capital out of the reserve, and the remaining amount gives you your reserve for capital improvements. So this 4.9 plus our capital and our designated money, that's already designated.
For paving or whatever?
No, not for paving. Only the general fund.
Okay, go ahead.
So things like our 911 and stuff like that. And then that gives you what amount we have for our reserve for capital projects.
So whenever we, for instance, the pier that's been replaced at the beach, I noticed in the budget there's a portion of, I guess maybe the last quarter, the last draw for completing the pier project. The biggest bulk of the pier replacement will come out of this year's budget. It's already encumbered for out of this year's budget, right? And so the 1.2 million or whatever it was we got back from FEMA last year, from Hurricane Hermine, where does that money
go? Everything that we got back goes back into, basically it was shown in revenue from FEMA. $600,000 is what we set aside for the canals because we weren't sure about, they have several 3 years to come back. Okay.
Right.
So that's actually part of our reserve capital project. That's part of the period forward money.
Okay. Whenever we have, if we have a hurricane this year and we have to do a bunch of road repairs and so forth, FEMA's always a reimbursement. That money comes from where?
If it's general fund, it's going to come out of your reserve capital project.
Okay.
And that's where you put the 600 and something thousand. And if FEMA wants their money back, it'll come back out of that fund.
Yes, sir.
How long do they have to come back on this?
3 years.
3 years, you say?
3 years, you said enough.
It's been another year to see that on that.
And I think Steve was pretty confident they were going to get that.
Big part.
I think Steve was pretty confident when he was in emergency management that they were going to request that money back.
Well, if we get off.
Yes.
There's no guarantee we're going to get off.
I mean, it's a 50-50 chance you probably would have to give that back.
Yeah. Okay, if there are no other questions, then this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Not on time.
Yeah, that's good.
Not on time.